I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
You ain't shit!
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
But fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof at the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not lies. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jimmy McGuinness in his life.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. We're streaming live as well now. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope, on Twitter, at Off the Ball, on YouTube and on Facebook. So tomorrow, Clare and Limerick should have been clashing the Ash in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship at Cusick Park in Ennis, but the slitter in the safety deposit box at the moment because of COVID-19. Instead, we're going to talk over the next hour on the Saturday panel about the rivalry of two proud neighbours and hurling counties, with Clare's Jamesy O'Connor and Limerick's Joe Quaid. Joe, I'll start with you. Hope you're well.
All good now, yeah.
And Joe, I remember you so many days in goal for Limerick in the 90s, and finally you made the breakthrough a couple of years ago. Joe, when you started hurling as a under 21 and then an inter-county senior player, were Cork and Tipperary always overshadowing everything you did in Limerick and Clare?
I suppose at senior level they were. I played my first Munster minor final in 89, and it was actually against Clare, and they beat us. So I suppose the rivalry between ourselves and Clare was always there coming up along. I remember playing under 21 down in Innes on a dreary Friday night, I think it was, and I think we were beaten 23 points to 3. Coming near the end, we got a goal at the last puck of the game. So that Clare team that I suppose I was coming up against at senior level, we had been up against them at underage level as well. So I suppose we had the hoodoo over Clare for a good few years at senior level, up until the trimming they gave us in 93 down in Innes. And I suppose that was kind of the start of the rivalry. And yeah, as James Eel know, sometimes the matches that we played, whether they be opening of fields or challenge matches or league or championship, sometimes, and I suppose I had a perfect bird's eye view, sometimes the action above on the terrace between the supporters was even livelier than what it was on the field.
Could you hear a lot back then, Joe, from the terraces? Could you hear a lot of what was being said to you? Or is it a case that you just blanked that out? And maybe the crowd is so... It's funny with the Bundesliga, you hear everything at the moment with it behind closed doors. But back then in Munster final matches, Joe, could you hear everything? Or was it just a case of you zoning out?
Well, I suppose you're trying to zone out. But the fact, I suppose, playing in goals, you're so close to the crowd. I actually remember vividly the 89 minor final. And I suppose the crowds were starting to come in towards the end of the match. And there's a great legend from my own club, home club, Fiona, back in West Limerick, a woman known as Annie Leahy. She's still hale and hearty, and I think I made a save, and all I could hear was a big roar, probably in the middle of 30,000-40,000 people of Up Fiona. So if you can hear that, you tend to hear a lot of the abuse as well that's thrown at you and things. But look, come the day of a match, and when it's in the melting pot, you're really focused on one thing and one thing only, and that's getting over the line.
And for many years, Joe, you did get over the line against Clare. I remember like Mick Mackey's Greyhounds in 1955. You'd read about them beating Clare when Clare had already defeated Cork and Tip in the Munster Championship 1974, 1981. Did you always feel, Joe, you had the measure of this crowd and you're going to play them before it all went wrong in ways?
I suppose we did. Look, Mackey's Greyhounds, my father was actually a member of that team, and Tommy's father and Lord Mercy and Nicky's grandfather I suppose we come from a long tradition back to the 50s of backing up against Clare and that, and my father was part of that Mackey's Greyhounds team in 55 when they shot Clare by all accounts. So look, the rivalry's always been there. Like, you go back, I suppose Anthony Daly, I suppose, has always said it, you know, when we were hurling back in the 90s, we didn't want Clare to do well. They certainly didn't want us to do well. And I suppose we all made it known to each other down through the years. I think Jamesy will vote to the fact we probably went to some functions, Railway Cup functions and that, and kind of the Clare lads tended to keep to themselves and the Limerick lads tended to keep to themselves, you know. So it was, to say, I suppose, when Clare won in 95, it really hurt us. And fair play to them, they got over the line. We had two opportunities to get over the line. We didn't. Clare had the same opportunities, and they took them. So, you know, hats off to the lads. But there's massive rivalry. Look, the amount of people from Clare working in Limerick, the amount of people from Limerick working in Clare. And we like to claim that all the Clare lads were born in Limerick, probably in the Innes Road, anyone that was, because it's the only maternity hospital in the region. So there's bound to be a great rivalry. But I think the one thing we would have always had for each other was a massive respect. You know, to be fair, we've made great friends down through the years out of it. There's great characters on both teams. And I remember especially being over at the Shinty in Scotland, in Oban, in, I think it was 97. And it was the Munster team that we were after winning the Railway Cup, and we got a reward, was a trip over to play Shinty. So some of us flew from Shannon to Dublin, and some of the Waterford lads and that flew to Dublin as well. We all met up, and sure, on the Friday we started to have a few pints, and we got on the plane, and over we went, and the bus, about 5-hour journey, I think it was nearly, and we were halfway up, and we stopped in this pub at the side of a mountain with a few more pints, and all the lads were mixing, the Clare lads, Limerick lads, Waterford, Cork, everyone, and I think Brian Lohan was captain at the time, and I think he came over to all of us. He said, "Lads, do you realise you're representing your country tomorrow?" And I think it was nearly in unison that all the lads from the different counties turned around and said, "Brian, will you ever?" And let's just say that the second word was off.
Right.
But we suffered the following morning. Mike Mack was over us from Clare.
Oh, Mike Mack, great trainer. He was a man who trained you into the ground, at Croisín, obviously, for the Clare lads.
Trainer that day, more like drill sergeant. He got everybody up that morning at about 9:30 down to some field and ran us till we all got sick and put us back to bed again, getting ready to face the Scots. I don't think we did very well though.
No, Shinty was a game that wasn't played that often. You weren't playing in 1993, you were an under 21. So 1994, Joe, was the first time in a Munster final that you'd experienced a Munster final atmosphere against Clare. And you didn't really have a lot to do. Limerick trimmed them that day.
Yeah, it was probably a handy enough Munster final from our perspective. Because we were after coming through, it was probably nobody's really. We had beaten Cork in the Gaelic grounds. We got over Waterford reasonably handy enough. I think there might have been only 2 points in the end, but I think I left in one of my softest goals near the end of that match. And to be fair, the day of the Munster final, we were comfortable the whole way through. But the one thing was in 95, I remember Mike Galligan ringing me the night before the match, the Munster final 95, and he said he was listening to Clare FM, and he said they had interviews with the players and that, and he said, they sound very confident. And I said, "Mike, we've got to be extremely careful tomorrow." I said, "These boys are up for it." And I think maybe the attitude in 95 was we took the foot off the gas lightly. And by God, when we did, Clare fairly put the metal to the pedal. And they trimmed us. That was a real trimming we got in 95, and it hurt.
Was it a bit of a hangover, though, Joe, from 94 for you, from the All-Ireland final that you had in the palm of your hands, and they just slipped away from you against Offaly?
I don't think it was, because, look, if it was a hangover, it would have hampered us in the first round of 95 against Tip. So we had got to the Munster final. We felt we were there on merit. And I suppose it was on a pathway to righting the wrongs of 94. There's no better way to get over a crushing defeat than go out and right the wrongs the following year. So I don't think it was. I think just Clare got it right. I think their mental side of their game had improved no end. And that, on top of quite a lot of talent, got them over the line and got them over the line comfortably.
Jamesy, we have you on the line now. Hope you're well. And Jamesy, you were just speaking to Joe Quaid there about the mid-90s, and I was looking through the stats. Before 1993, Cork and Tippett won 79 Munster titles between them, Clare and Limerick 16. But for the next few years, the both counties dominated. Was it a case, Jamesy, for you that was a bit of an inferiority complex about Limerick, that they'd beaten you in 55, 74, 81? Did you really feel that it was until Gerlach Nan came in that he changed everything and made you believe that you could win a Munster title and beat Limerick?
Yeah, well, in relation to Limerick, John, I mean, I came into the panel in end of 92, 93 with my first year or whatever, and my championship table was against Limerick and Ennis, and Limerick had won the league. We were total underdogs, nothing expected of us, and we were up for it big time. I think Dalo famously, I think, upended Mike Rail, you know, when we were breaking up in the parade, and probably Limerick were just probably underestimated us a little bit. And we'd no pedigree, no confidence, nothing. The league had been a disaster coming into that game. So that was 93, and obviously, you know, we went on to beat Cork, we got to the Munster final, got annihilated by Tip. We had Tip in 94, then huge chip on our shoulder going into that game. We kind of caught them on the hop, and we were, you know, got over Kerry, I think, we were back in the Munster final. And it was huge anticipation heading down to play Limerick in 94. And obviously, at half-time, we were probably 4 or 5 points down, very much in the game, I thought anyway. And, you know, we just needed to... We hadn't played particularly well. We just needed someone to say the right thing and address them at half-time. And someone said, I think, that we're not beaten yet. Out of my mind, we were beaten there and then. And they made a couple of, you know, I think, wrong moves. Johnny McMahon went out wing back on Mike Galligan and, you know, took off a couple of guys. And really, Limerick just, you know, demolishes in the second half. And that was bitterly disappointing. So heading into 95, John, I mean, again, like we, you know, obviously the Cork game was massive to get over Cork. But once we got to the Munster final, I mean, you couldn't possibly contemplate losing three Munster finals in a row. And we had trained incredibly hard. As Joe said as well, the team had improved. I mean, you know, the young fellas like Frank Lohan, Ollie Baker, Stephen Mack, Fergal Higgins that had come into the team had all improved. And Michael Holleran was you know, top-class cornerback. And I suppose Limerick, again, maybe weren't ready for suppose, the hunger and enthusiasm that we brought in the day.
The Munster Championship lads, back then especially, had a magic aura, but probably because it was knockout. You've got Porky Cueve, Semple Stadium, the Gaelic grounds, hot summer days, the crowd feeding off the supporters. Did you feel like that as a player? Did it feel like a cauldron? And it was almost like a prison, and you're trying to break out of it and get into the All-Ireland series by winning Munster.
It definitely was. I think, look, there's a huge bias we have probably for the Munster Championship down here. And I know it doesn't go down well in Leinster and things, but I think, James, you'll agree that, Jesus, going out Munster Championship Day, there's nothing like it. It's the buzz, the excitement. It's almost like playing with your club in a county final. You know, you've everyone behind you. You know an awful lot of the supporters. You know the players personally. You know, I just can't think. There's nothing better than it. I'll to the day I die, I'll never forget my debut against Cork in 94. And John, it wasn't always sunny. It was piss and rain that day. Two goals had gone in after 15 minutes. I think we were down 6 or 8 points. An old man stood up behind my father, Tommy, the Lord of Mercy, had retired the year before. And when the second goal went in, and mind you, none of the first two were my fault, he lifted off his cap and threw it down the ground. He said, for feck's sake, bring back Tommy Quaid. He said, that young fella isn't up to it. And by the end of the match, I went on to have a blinder and sure I was the best thing since the sliced pen. But it was just the following days after the matches, I think it was the 94 Munster final, it could have been. No, sorry, it was after the match in 96, the drawing of the match at Kerry's Point, yeah, against Clare, the semi-final. like the following Monday, it was a done thing then that you'd go for a few points on the Monday. And we went into the Stillhouse in Limerick, and Fingers was inside with the girlfriend having a pint. And that night, and like we were after robbing him the day before, and we all went in and we were chatting, and you probably knew he was uncomfortable, but I remember the Monday game was beyond that time, and it came on, and I suppose the poor man, he had to probably sit down through it because he couldn't be seen to go away while it was on. But that was the kind of aura that was around the place. You could meet the guys you were playing against the following day down the street. You could meet them inside in a pub. You could have a pint with them. You know, it was...
Plus you were waiting so long for it, because you know, obviously, you know, the games were knockout, and you know, if you didn't perform on the day, you were waiting 12 months again. And I mean, particularly in 95, when I look back, I mean, you know, the Cork game, we couldn't have trained any harder. The physical training was savage that year, and we left no stone unturned. But yet the nature of it, you know, Frank Lohan was kind of doing exams in college, and Frank didn't start, and Shawnee was probably doing finals, and we could very easily have lost that game to Cork, John. And suddenly you're waiting 12 months again, wondering what do we have to do to get this right. So that certainly meant the stakes were probably higher than they are, say, for the current lads. When you know you're 7 days time or 2 weeks time, you're going to get to go again and get another crack at it. So that certainly added to it. And I mean, I'll never forget 96 and the absolute devastation after losing. And you know, we literally had to wait 12 months to play another championship match, which you know, meant obviously that we were busting our backsides all winter long and couldn't wait to get out of the end of 97.
Fingers as PJ O'Connell, of course, the Clare forward in 95. He had a great game. This whole thing changed for me when Limerick won the 94 Munster final, and then there was a league game between 94 and 95 when Declan Nash and Jim McInerney were sent off. Did it, because it seemed that now Clare and Limerick were some of the best teams in the country, and Cork and Tipper on hiatus, that suddenly this gets fierce, this gets tribal, this gets intense, not dirty, but very, very competitive. And was there a lot of sledging on the pitch? We spoke to Darren O'Sullivan and Daniel Goulding last week about, you know, chatter on the pitch, and they were saying there isn't much of it. And maybe in the modern game there isn't. But back then, what was the style of hurling, and was there a lot of talk during matches?
I've had to laugh there at... You were saying it wasn't dirty. It was dirty, John. And the particular incident with Declan Nash and Jim McInerney, I think Declan Nash got a real lesson that day. Declan made a mistake. He dropped his holly. Jim didn't. But the other side of it was Jim probably forgot that Declan's brother Mike was also alongside him. So, that was part of the game at the time. I don't know, James, do you remember this? I can't remember, it was a league match we played in Turles. I think it was a league semi-final or quarter-final one time, and was it young Stephen McNamara came on as a sub, and a ball came in to me, and I put my hand up, and he flicked to go for the ball, and he met me into the eye with the hurley. And all I remember is I was caught, and I just went down, and I looked up, and Steve McDonough gave him, I'd say, 36 out of the 37 inches of the hurley into the ribs.
No better man, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, James, if you can remember, I think James, he went up to Steve McDonough and said, "Oh, Jesus, Steve, go easy, he's only a young fella." And McDonough, I think, turned around to James and he said, "Jamesy, this is no place for young fellas." Yeah. If you remember that. It was
Certainly there was a sense, I suppose, John, of maybe familiarity breeding contempt. And, you know, obviously, you know, we met in the championship in 93, 94, 95, 96 and so on. And you're meeting the league as well, and maybe Oireachtas games and challenge matches. And certainly, look, there was an edge to it. And, you know, there were scores been settled. And no more than, I suppose, our fullback line or our defence, you know, with Steve McDonough and the two Nashes inside the Limerick fullback line, you know, it was physical, it was tough, and that was the way it was. Yeah. But in terms of sledging on the pitch, I don't ever recall real verbals.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'd have
imagined. I don't either, to be honest.
And Mark Foley and guys like that, Kieran Carey, and there was, you know, there might have been the odd common pass, but you know, generally speaking, the hurling was just tough. It was aggressive. It was hard, and that was the way the game was played at the time.
We got to take a break, folks.
Respect.
James O'Connor and Joe Quaid on the Clare and Limerick hurling rivalry. 5-3-1-0-6. You've got to chip in on this one if you remember. This is a great match. It's back after two with the news.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Saturday on News Talk, John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. You are also watching us, if you can, on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball on YouTube, on Facebook. You can get in touch with us on Twitter as well, at Off the Ball. This week's Saturday panel dedicated to the Clare Limerick hurling rivalry. They should have been playing tomorrow at Cusack Park in Ennis in the Round Robin. That's been a great success the last few years, the Round Robin and the Munster Hurling Championship. But instead, to talk about some of the glory days and the past rival matches from the 90s, especially two household names, Clare's Jamesy O'Connor and Limerick's Joe Quaid, with us 53106 on the text machine. I'll never forget 1995. I was at the back of the Hogan stand with my 11-year-old at the final whistle. He ran off on me. I caught him eventually where the team were going to get the cup. It was unreal after 81 long years, as Daly said, up the banner. Are Mike Houlihan and Ollie Baker twins separated at birth in the maternity? A great shame that Limerick didn't win the All-Ireland in the 1990s. They had some super hurlers like Joe Quaid, Mike Houlihan, Mark Foley and Gary Kirby that deserved an All-Ireland. That is from Sean. Absolutely right, Sean. They did deserve one. They got one in 2018 in the end. And John, can you ask Joe Quaid about the influence of Tom Ryan as a manager and Jamesy about Gerlach Nan, Tony Considine and Mike Mack? That is from Mike. Joe?
Yeah, Tom Ryan. Some character. To be fair, Tom had a unique way of managing people. It probably didn't suit everybody, but
did it suit you?
He definitely got the best out of me, because Tom was the type of fella, just as you'd be going well and probably getting a bit ahead of yourself, he'd cut you down to the ground. I remember after my debut in 94, and I probably amended the match performance after the first two goals went in. And the following Tuesday night at training, we were standing up and Tom was giving his bit of a speech, you know, and he turned around and he said to me, he said, "What's all this blocking the ball out for, like? What's that crack?" He said, "People talking about you being great and this and that and the other." And he said, "Every time you blocked it out," he said, "it went to the back of the net after it." And I think as our match went down the train, and our ball came through, I think TJ Ryan came through and hit one. I didn't bother moving, and he turned around and said, "What's that for?" I said, "So there's no point blocking them, Tom." And the words "smart something" were used, but he would drive you. Do you know?
Was he a good motivator, Joe? Was he?
He was. He was a character, like, he's just...
But there must have been something as well, Joe. You got to two All-Ireland finals. You could have won two. You won two Munster finals. You hadn't won one since the early 80s. Was he tactically good? Was it Dave Mahidi's training? What was it?
He had a great backroom team with him. Like, Dave Mahidi did an awful lot of the hurling stuff with us. And do you know what? It probably wasn't fair on Dave, because he hadn't come from a hurling background. And Dave was probably ahead of his game. Ahead of his time with us, like he had the backing, I suppose, of UL with him, and you know he had everything at his disposal, and we had that knowledge coming to us as well. Tom did practically none of the training; it was Dave did it all. But when Tom spoke, you listened. Now, as I say, he was just such a character. I think before we played Cork in 96 down in the park, he announced the team on the Thursday night and went through, as he would do, everybody's role. And he goes to me, he said, "Quaid, we don't want no more of your effing gymnastics diving around the place acting. We'll put a beep in for that, John."
And yeah, I think you got one on your phone anyway, Joe. Yeah.
About 10 minutes into the first half, Mark Mullins, a ball dropped him and he pulled in it and was hitting for the corner, and I dived and tapped it around the post, and we were in at half time, and Tom walks in, and I was kind of just sitting inside the door dressing room. I got a belt in the back, and Tom just left a big laugh out of him. "We were glad you were effing gymnastics now, weren't we, Quaid?" You know, so he'd cut you down and he'd praise you at the same time. But the one thing that I feel Tom was unfairly criticised for was in 94. He got the blame for sitting on the bench and not getting up and being up and down the sideline and we closing out the game. Like, that was down to us. That wasn't down to Tom Ryan being up and down the sideline. Like, Eamon Cregan will tell you, he was up and down the sideline that day, and with the first goal that Offaly got, Eamon Cregan told Johnny Dooley to go for a point. So that really had much influence there. But Tom got badly criticised and badly treated in a lot of quarters in Limerick. Like Clare, I suppose, we weren't blessed for many a year with winning anything. Tom had brought us to 2 Munster titles, a league title, and was basically cast on the scrap heap. I suppose these famous 20 questions were put to him after the 94 final, I think, was, or 96 final. It really wasn't fair on the man that had given his heart and soul to the thing. Like, in 94, if we'd won that final, wasn't Tom Ryan the coolest manager ever to manage a team to the final? You know, and I'll go back again and say, I don't think Tom had anything really to do with us losing that final.
Yeah, and I think from a Clare perspective as well, John, you know, you teams, I suppose, often maybe reflect the character of the manager, and you knew going out to play Limerick like that, look, it was going to be physical, it was going to be aggressive, it was going to be, you know, tough, and he just came across as that kind of an abrasive character, and you kind of respected him. And like, just on that, I mean, Loughnane had gone through something similar in Clare. I mean, we lost the under-21 final in 92, and you know, to Waterford, and a really good Waterford team, whatever, and he was castigated after it and you know, dumped the following year when we arguably had as good an under-21 side, and Limerick beat us, you know, in the first round. But certainly for me in 95, one of the things that changed in the championship, you know, was against Cork. I think that Loughnane had maybe this perception that he had to be detached and this cool figure on the sideline making the decisions and making the moves. And obviously against Cork, things weren't going to plan, and Shawnee had broken his collarbone and we had all the subs used up. But certainly in the second half of that game, Loughnane suddenly, to me, threw off the shackles, and he was suddenly on the pitch and he was waving a fist in your face, driving you on. And to me, it was a sea change for us and for him, because that's what Loughnane needs to be doing. You know, we needed to feed off the energy and the drive that he, you know, the, I suppose, look at just the character and the charisma that he had. And, you know, when you would Loughnane maybe just giving you a word in the pitch or whatever, I mean, I think it just meant something more to you, and he probably got more out of us doing that. And certainly up to that, the Munster Championship match against Cork, that semi-final 95, you know, I think we saw a different Loughnane after that. And after that, you couldn't get him off the pitch, you know. But certainly Tom Ryan, yeah, was a guy that we'd a lot of regard for, respect for. And I think, as I said, the Limerick team reflected, I think, his personality and his toughness and bloody-mindedness.
Yeah, my dad was from Quinn and Clare. He's long gone now, but I was there in 95, and the tickets cost 10 punts. It's Club Orange, it's ham sandwiches. It is literally the cliche, and you're going into the Ryan stand in Thurles, and it was just a magical day and really hot day, and Clare just took flight in the second half after Davy Fitz scored the penalty against you, Joe. And then a year later, another scorching day, Kieran Carey's moment with that point when you were 3 points down, you come back to score the next 4 points and win by one. To be playing in those matches, guys, whether you win or lose, this is what amateur sport. And I do think the intensity's gone out of it. I do think we see the intensity, say, towards a semi-final or a final of the All-Ireland series. But the knockout, while I think it's wrong and it's not right for the professional amateur era, as I would call it, of course players are amateurs now, but they're not paid. But with the amount of work they're putting in, they need more than one match a year. But back then, there was something special about that.
Well, James, I think you would agree with me. Like, would we have come back in 96 against Clare if we knew there was another day out? Like, it was do or die. You were going home. I remember 15 minutes left in that match. My uncle was doing stewarding behind the goals. We looked like we were done and dusted, and he brought me out a ball to puck out, and I pucked it out, and I went back to him, and I said, "It's ever done." And he said, "It looks like it." I was kind of looking up at the stand going, "Well, I go on my holidays this year." Do you know? And that's the way it was. It was that stark. If you were beaten first game of the year or last game of the year, whenever you were beaten, you were gone. And would the drive be there to come back and put everything, absolutely everything on the line to get back to winning that match. The same in the final in 96 against Tip, we were down 10 points at halftime. Like, I remember Kieran Carey coming into the dressing room and fellas were going to the toilet and sitting down. He got everyone to stand up straight after going in and give an unbelievable speech. Let's get back out there. Like, are we going to bow to the championship like this? And I know Tip people said, some of the players, that we were gone back out after 5 or 6 minutes. And they said it was like facing into Bale na Bláth. It was an ambush they came out into in the second half. Like, they could feel it in the ground, the tension. When they came out, we were there for probably 10 minutes waiting for them. Do you know, would that happen nowadays? No. But at the same time, I do agree that the round robin, especially last year, I thought it worked. They got it right. The matches that were played were superb. It's given, I suppose, players a lot more opportunity. Like, you know, James, if you had a bad day in the championship in your first outing, you mightn't play again that year.
And John, even the rivalry, I mean, we obviously had you guys, 93, 94, 95, 96, but I didn't play Limerick in the championship again after that in my career. And I played until, 2004. I mean, it was, that's one of the things that I suppose was down to the vagaries of the draw that, you know, as it moved on, kind of, we just didn't meet Limerick, and suddenly Tip and us, we seemed to be drawing the championship every year together. And that maybe became, I suppose, for us, the biggest rivalry, purely because we weren't meeting Limerick in the championship. And that's been something that's been great to see, you know, even I suppose going back to, you know, 2018 when you won it or whatever. I mean, you know, coming out to Ennis and that was arguably the winning of that Ireland for Limerick that year. You know, the fact that you came to Ennis or whatever, and, you know, Clare obviously were up for it big time, and you'd come back from, you know, I suppose the epic performance in Cork, 14 men getting the draw and you know, played really well. And I suppose, again, it was Ennis was electric that day. Great crowd, great buzz, big crowd at Limerick from, you know, early in the day. And that's what you want to see in the championship. But going back to 96, I mean, it was scorching hot in Limerick that day, John. I mean, it was the ground was so hard. I mean, I think I actually threw my feet were, I think Kieran Carey, I think the boots had to be cut off him after the game.
Yeah, I went in with him after the match, Jamesy, and 10, 15 minutes previous, he had gone up the field and scored that. And he took off his boots. We were sitting alongside each other. He took off his boots. He had no skin left on the bottom of his feet.
Yeah. And I finished that game with my socks like that now, whatever I was wearing, just the feet were starting to get cut off me. And I think I threw off the boots and you heard about, it was a Babs that famously did it back in the day. But yeah, people don't realize, because even the heat in the ground that day, and it was packed to the rafters. And yeah, Joe, I mean, look at I don't think I've ever watched that game back in full, right? Or certainly not in over 20 years. But we had you on the rack, and we were three up, and we had a few chances, I suppose, maybe to kill you off, and didn't take them. And you know, we I suppose ultimately we paid the price, but it was some score, you know, from some player. And I was marking, like, I actually had started wing forward, and I'd gone in centre forward on Kieran, and then they'd moved him, they'd switched him up midfield, I suppose, with 5 or 10 minutes left, whatever. And Houlihan came in, of course, centre back. And when Carey's point went over, I mean, I just braced myself. And Houlihan, of course, hit me with every ounce of my head. And there's nothing sicker than looking, one knowing you're probably hitting out of the Munster Championship after that score, and two seeing Houlihan coming at you and braced yourself. You know,
well, and if he saw him, Jamesy, I don't think Ollie Baker saw him that day, did he?
Yeah, well, we won't count on that, Joe, you know. We won't count on that.
For legal reasons.
A bit of ribbon. Obviously, yeah. So, but in recent years, guys, in, say, 2013, Clare and Limerick met for the first time in an All-Ireland semi-final. 63,000 there. Limerick are flat. You'd won the Munster title. Clare won by 7 points. But has a bit of the fierceness gone out of it because of the way, say, for example, players would know each other now in UL and LIT? You got players like Seamus Hickey playing for Flannans. You'd have a lot of the Clare lads from 2013, Dara Honan, Nicky O'Connell, Conor Ryan playing for Ardskull Reach. You've got friends, you've got neighbours in effectively in the same parish with, like, the Parishic and these kind of clubs. Has the buzz gone out of it a bit?
I wouldn't think so for the players themselves. I don't think so. Like, I remember before we went to Ennis in 18, I actually made a statement and people thought I was mad. Because it would have determined, if we had won, I think we would have finished top of the group, if I'm right. And I said, if we finish top of the group, we're not going to win the All-Ireland. And I actually said it publicly. I said, if Limerick have any chance to win the All-Ireland in 18, they cannot win below Ennis. And look, it's been a graveyard for Limerick teams down there. To be fair, if the match was going ahead tomorrow, whether Limerick and Clare or whoever was going well or not, if Limerick were going very well, I'd be still very wary of going down there. You know, so there is massive rivalry still there. I think probably not as much of the players, okay, but Jesus, the supporters, it's still as intense as ever.
Yeah, I think it's as you said, John, earlier. I mean, like the players would tell you, look at Clare playing Limerick means everybody as much to those guys as it did to us. But as you said, like they know each other so much better now than we did probably back in the day. You know, I mean, I don't think I was in college with any of the Limerick guys in Galway. TJ was a fresher in my last year, and I was on teaching practice, and I was kind of out of it, and wouldn't have got to know him that well. But Hurley, am I right? But you know, Turlough Kirby would have been a couple of years ahead of me in Flannans. But even in UL, I mean, you know, Brian Lowe and Shawnee were in there. But I'm not sure if any of that Limerick panel that we were crossing paths with, you know, the Steve McDonoughs, the Hoolahans, the Gary Kirby's, they were probably that bit older than us. We certainly didn't know each other. Didn't know each other as well. But I'll tell you a story, John. I mean, again, I mentioned this maybe we were talking during the week about it was 98. And the GPA had called a meeting or whatever in November, late November, might have even been early December, in the Hibernian Hotel down in Mallow. And Brian Lohan, I think, had contacted me, and himself and Dalo and Niall Gilligan were going down. So Lohan said he'd drive. So down I went anyway. And sure, Mike Houlihan, Steve McDonough, Clem Smith and James Moran were there from the Limerick side. And sure, we got chatting in the bar, you know, after the meeting or whatever. And Houlihan and Daly were deep in conversation or whatever. And next thing, Daly announced to Charleville, I think it was the top of the town, Joe. You might be familiar with it, whatever. So yeah, in we went anyway. And I was conscious. We were playing Tumivara in the Munster Club final on the Sunday. And this is the Friday night now. And I was saying, right, this isn't going to end well now with Daly and Lohan and Hoolan and Gilligan and whatever. So in we went anyway. And I'd say it was between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. And Hoolan, we'd sandwiches and all at this stage, preference treatment. It would be a great night, but Daly was falling off the stool, telling me like that Tommy Dunn had at least 3 hours sleep got at this stage, you know, and no sign of going home or whatever and getting out of there. But we didn't, that didn't happen very often, you know. We didn't, I suppose there was such rivalry between the two sides. And effectively, you know, John, as we said earlier, like you were gone. It was one and done, you know, 93 for them, 94 for us, the Munster final, that was it. You went home, you didn't get those other opportunities, and certainly added to the intensity. And as I said, we just probably didn't know each other as well as the current players do, because, as you said, like the you know, in Clare, you've had Clonlara, I suppose, and Cratlow and guys that are maybe on the Limerick border, and you've had those guys from Sixmile Bridge going to school in you know, in our school. You've had LIT, UL, Mary I, a heap of the Clare lads are in there, and you know, they're great friends with some of the Limerick guys. So that, I think, has diluted to an extent, although the current players will probably still tell you, you know, that it matters to them every bit as much as it did to us. But it's a different game as well now. It's a possession game, and it's a running game, and it's certainly not as physical or as aggressive or as Joe said, maybe as dirty as it was back in the 90s.
I think, lads, the success of Clare that you had in the 90s, Jamesy, and then Davy Fitz in 2013, and then a couple of years ago with John Kiely, Joe, I think Limerick and Clare will be up in the top part of the hierarchy in hurling when hurling does return. We don't know when that's going to be, but I do think the counties are well set with John Kiely and with Brian Lowen going forward.
Yeah, look, I suppose Clare have been a kind of a sleeping dog again. They never really drove on the way we all expected them to kind of dominate the thing, I suppose, after 13. But look, that was shown last year. Limerick were probably red hot favourites to retain it last year and fell to Kilkenny. So, like, there's definitely a kickback in Clare under Brian. Like, I think when this whole thing shut down, there were probably the two farm teams in the league. And to be fair, Brian had used a shed load of players. Limerick had done the same, had a lot of changes coming up. So
both panels were vital. They were in good shape, and that's vital going forward. Jamesy, I think you'll agree, like, the day of the 15 players or 16 or 17 players, that day is gone. I suppose Shane Dowling is the perfect example of that in 18. Shane Dowling, even, I think, in his interview after the semi-final, basically put it out to John Kiely, you have to stop me. He didn't, and he brought him on in the final, and Shane Dowling was probably one of the players all through that year that was responsible more than anyone nearly for Limerick winning All-Ireland, but as a sub.
Yeah, I know, definitely, John. I mean, you're, and as Joe said, like, look at Limerick. Limerick to me looks, you know, like the team that everyone was going to have to beat this year. And obviously, you know, huge disappointments, you know, to fall, I suppose, you know, to Kilkenny last year. And remember what they did to Tip in the Munster final as well. So certainly, I mean, there was a burning desire, I'd say, in the Limerick camp to, you know, to get back, because, you know, the clock, like the Clare lads will tell you, from 2013, the years slip by very, very quickly. And some of those guys now in the Clare panel are gone, or they're into maybe the latter part of their careers. And, you know, from a Clare perspective, look at, yeah, great start to the league. You know, great buzz around the camp again. As Joe said, like, Brian had, you know, given a lot of guys game time, and they've been in a really good place. And obviously for both panels, like, all the momentum is gone. And I suppose, look, they're just hoping now that things, you know, that there are positive vibes coming, and that there will be some kind of a championship played later in the year, and they have something to aim for and get back at it. But certainly the prospect this summer, John, of no championship, or, you know, as you said, like, today, we'll be looking forward to that game tomorrow. You know, in Ennis, it's really something, I suppose. Look, we might have to cling to hopefully later in the year.
Yeah, absolutely, Jamesy and Joe. 5-3-1-6 just to finish. Was at the 1996 match, Limerick against Clare. Even though I'm a Limerick fan, I thought Clare were the better team. Should have won. Was happy, though, that Limerick won. But to be fair, I have to admit that Clare threw it away. That is from Papo. They did win the All-Irelands. Joe and James, you've been great sports to talk to this afternoon about Clare and Limerick in the 90s. And hopefully everything's going okay for you during this difficult period. And we'll be back supporting the Banner and the Shannon Siders on the terraces soon.
Cheers, John.
Cheers, John. Thanks a million.
Joe Quaid and James O'Connor there on Off the Ball Saturday. 53106 for your texts. Back after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.